The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're tearing into a source that offers a pretty rare blueprint for success, especially in the, you know, volatile world of tech and finance. It's Michael Dell's memoir, Play Nice, But Win.
Yeah, and this book, it jumps right into what feels like the oldest tension in business, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
This idea that you've got to choose. Are you going to be super competitive, maybe even ruthless to dominate? Or can you actually be, you know, ethical, collaborative, decent? Dell basically says, hold on, that's a false choice.
Right. He argues pretty forcefully, I think, that if you want to build something that actually lasts, something sustainable for decades, not just a quick win, you absolutely need both. You need that competitive fire, the win part, but it has to be like woven together with integrity and collaboration. That's the play nice.
And sustainable victory, that's the key word he uses. It completely hinges on combining those two. It's not just about doing well once. It's about building a framework, a culture maybe, that lets you keep doing well, even when everything around you is changing or, you know, collapsing.
Okay, so let's talk about the person behind this idea, Michael Dell. I mean, he's obviously a huge name, an icon, really. But for anyone who maybe just knows the brand, what makes his perspective so valuable here?
Well, he is, of course, the founder, chairman, and CEO of Dell Technologies. And the origin story is legendary, right? Started in 1984, University of Texas dorm room. Just $1,000.
Incredible.
And the boon, he becomes the youngest CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah.
And he did it by fundamentally rewriting the rules of how computers were sold.
And I think this is maybe the crucial point. His journey wasn't just this smooth, straight lineup.
Not at all.
He's navigated, well, pretty much every corporate environment you can think of. He led that explosive startup growth. Then he had to manage this massive public company under intense scrutiny from Wall Street.
Yeah, the 90-day shot clock, as he calls it.
Exactly. Which ultimately forced him into the most radical phase.
That's right. He engineered this historic transformation. First, taking the company private in 2013, the largest leveraged buyout, or LBO, in tech history at the time.
A huge move.
And then, just a few years later, the absolutely colossal $67 billion acquisition of EMC in 2016. So his perspective resonates because he didn't just, you know, survive decades of massive change. He actively remade his company and arguably the industry multiple times.
Okay, that is definitely a playbook worth digging into. So turning to the book itself, its core purpose seems pretty ambitious. It wants to just demolish this myth that leaders have to be either ethical or competitive.
Yeah, it really uses the company's whole history as the evidence. It kind of unfolds chronologically, showing how this play nice but win idea wasn't just a slogan. It developed through facing real gritty challenges.
Like battling giants, IBM, HP in the early days.
Mm-hmm. Or handling internal crises when things went wrong, or even facing down those activist investors later on.
And what he emphasizes again and again is that the most powerful, the most lasting competitive advantages weren't some secret tech sauce.
Right.
It was things like authentic partnerships, being transparent in communication, building a culture driven by actual values. He makes this case that these things people often call soft skills are actually the hardest, most durable strategic tools you can have.
They're the foundation, really, the bedrock that lets you make those big aggressive moves without the whole thing just collapsing under pressure.
Okay, let's dive into that timeline then and see how it actually played out. It all starts with the direct model revolution that was his first big disruptive idea. What was the inefficiency he spotted back in the early PC days?
Well, he looked at the way things were done. Manufacturer sells to a distributor, who sells to a retailer, who finally sells to you, and he saw massive inefficiency.
Just layers and layers.
Exactly. Adding cost at every step and creating this huge distance between the person making the computer and the person actually using it. The aha moment was realizing, hey, I can just cut out all those middlemen?
Okay, so bypassing retailers, that sounds pretty ruthless. That sounds like a pure win move. Where does the play nice fit in there? I mean, he's essentially putting retailers out of business.
Yeah, that's where the nuance is really important.
Yeah.
The play nice wasn't necessarily directed at the retailers he was disrupting. It was focused on the stakeholders he kept central, the customer, first and foremost, and also his suppliers. By building custom PCs to order, he created this direct, honest relationship with the customer.
A feedback loop.
An immediate feedback loop, exactly. He provided better value. That's the win. But it was built on trust and transparency with the actual end user. That was the Play Nice Foundation.
And this direct model also fueled the operational genius that funded the whole company's expansion, right? Tell us about that negative cash conversion cycle again. It's this huge financial concept, but it sounds almost like magic.
It is pretty revolutionary, especially back then. So think about traditional retail. A company buys inventory, pays for it, puts it on a shelf, and then hopes someone buys it eventually.
Yeah.
All that time, their cash is tied up.
Right, sitting there.
Dell flipped it completely. Because he took custom orders and payment first, and then built the PC, using components that arrived just in time, often just hours before shipping.
He got paid before he had to pay his suppliers.
Exactly. He received the customer's money before he had to pay his own suppliers.
Wow. So he's essentially using the customer's cash to fund his inventory. He turned the whole funding model upside down.
That's the financial engine. That incredible efficiency is what fueled the company's explosive growth. That was the win, powered by the direct model structure.
But as often happens, that strength eventually became a weakness, didn't it? Leading to that crisis point in the mid-2000s.
It did. The company got so big, and maybe too focused on shaving every last penny off costs, that it kind of became complacent. It lost some of that initial focus on innovation and the customer experience.
So Dell comes back as CEO in 2007. He sees the company needs like radical surgery, biz long-term investments in new areas. But then he runs smack into the Wall Street problem, the 90-day shot clock. Can you explain that constraint for listeners?
Sure. When you're a public company, your life is dictated by the quarterly earnings report. Wall Street demands short-term predictability. They want smooth, upward earnings growth every 90 days.
Which is the enemy of big change.
Completely. It's the enemy of radical, maybe initially painful long-term pivots. If you say, hey, we need to invest heavily in R&D that won't pay off for 3 years, well, your stock is likely going to tank in the next quarter.
Yep.
That constant short-term pressure makes genuine transformation incredibly difficult, almost impossible sometimes.
So the only path forward he saw was to take the company private again, which led to that massive $24.9 billion leverage buyout in 2013. Now, this sounds like a pure finance move, a really high-stakes gamble.
Oh, it was a monumental financial risk, no doubt. Done with a private equity partner, Silver Lake Partners. But the real drama, the real test of the play nice but win philosophy came when the antagonist showed up, activist investor Carl Icahn.
Icahn. Yeah, arguably the poster child for win at all costs, right? He launched this hostile public campaign trying to kill the deal, claiming Dell was undervaluing the company, trying to steal it cheap.
Exactly.
So how did Dell's play nice principles hold up against that kind of, well, ruthless financial assault? Did they have to get down in the mud with him? Compromise their values?
Well, according to Dell's account in the book, they deliberately didn't. He frames it very clearly. Their plain ice approach meant sticking to the facts, being transparent with shareholders about the long-term vision and why going private was necessary for those investments.
So contrasting their strategy with Icahn's focus on short-term gain?
Precisely. Hmm. They aimed to win the proxy fight, not with shady tactics or misleading rhetoric, but by clearly articulating the strategic rationale, trusting shareholders to see the long-term value versus Icahn's, you know, financial maneuvering for a quick payout.
So the victory wasn't just about the money changing hands. It was framed as a fight for the company's soul, really, escaping that short-term market pressure to get the freedom they needed to reinvent themselves.
That's exactly how he presents it.
Okay, so they go private, they rebuild the foundation. What was the next audacious move? Where did they point the ship then?
They saw the market shifting again, dramatically, away from just PCs dominating everything and towards comprehensive IT infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
cloud computing, big data storage, cybersecurity. Dell needed to be a major player in the data center, end to end.
Which sets the stage for the EMC acquisition in 2016. $67 billion. I mean, that's just a staggering jump in scale and complexity, especially for a company that, let's not forget, started selling PCs out of a dorm room. What was the strategic vision there?
It was all about scale and synergy, really.
Mm.
Dell already had strong capabilities in servers, but EMC was the dominant force in data storage. Plus, and this was key, EMC held a majority stake in VMware, the absolute king of virtualization software.
Okay, putting those pieces together.
By combining Dell's server strength with EMC's storage dominance in VMware software, they could create this integrated infrastructure giant Dell Technologies, capable of serving basically every IT need a modern business has.
It really shows that the ability to win at that highest level, executing a merger of that sheer size and complexity, was only possible because they'd spent years building the internal culture and the external relationships, the play nice part, strong enough to actually manage the integration afterward.
Absolutely. The trust factor was huge.
Incredible. Okay, let's try and synthesize this core philosophy now. What are the main themes that run through the book?
I think the most foundational one has to be authentic relationships as a competitive advantage. Dell really hammers this home. Genuine long-term engagement with suppliers, with customers, with employees creates this durable advantage that competitors just can't easily copy by, say, undercutting your price for a quarter.
Yeah, that really challenges the old zero-sum thinking, doesn't it? That for me to win, you have to lose. He's saying value is created for everyone, not just extracted from someone else.
Exactly. Which ties nicely into the next theme, I think. Curiosity is a leadership superpower.
Explain that one.
Michael Dell's entire career just screams curiosity.
Yeah.
He was constantly driven to learn completely new, complex fields. I mean, mastering supply chain logistics when he was basically still a kid, then later tackling the intricacies of LBOs and these massive mega mergers.
Right.
That relentless drive to learn, to understand how things work, that's the fuel. It's essential for any company or leader hoping to survive multiple cycles of disruption and transformation. You have to keep learning.
That makes sense. Another really powerful theme for me was values-driven decision-making. And this isn't just about having as nice values printed on a poster in the lobby.
No, not at all. It's about ethical consistency acting as a practical decision-making framework. The book argues pretty strongly that sticking to this framework, even when it's hard, even when it requires short-term sacrifices, actually leads to better long-term business outcomes.
The idea that if your values don't occasionally cost you something, they aren't really authentic.
Exactly. They have to be tested to be real.
And finally, a theme that clearly enabled that huge LBO success, transparency and trust building.
Yes. He talks about strategic transparency, sharing the right information with the right people at the right time. It's far more powerful in the long run than hoarding information like some kind of secret weapon.
Especially during tough times.
Especially during crises or huge changes like a merger. Making stakeholders feel like informed partners, not just cogs in a machine, builds the internal resilience and trust you absolutely need to push forward with those big, risky strategic bets.
Yeah, the philosophy really comes alive in some of the memorable lines or quotes from the book.
Definitely. Here's one that directly addresses that potential confusion around play nice. The goal isn't to be liked. It's to build relationships that create mutual value and sustainable success.
That's a key distinction, isn't it? It's strategic relationship building for mutual benefit, not just superficial popularity contests.
Right. And this one really captures that abundance mindset that fueled so much of his growth. When you help others succeed, you create the conditions for your own success.
Mm-hmm. It's that ecosystem thinking again. Your business doesn't exist in a vacuum. Resilience comes from that interdependence, that mutual benefit.
Yeah. And maybe the line that best defines his biggest strategic gamble, the LBO. We had to trade the 90-day shot clock of Wall Street for a multi-year horizon to reinvent the company.
That just perfectly sums up the core motivation, doesn't it? Escaping the tyranny of the quarterly report to make the tough, necessary long-term investments. It defines the sacrifice required.
Exactly.
Okay, so for you, the listener, may be thinking, how does this apply to me tomorrow? What does play nice but win look like in everyday work roles? Let's start with managers, team leaders.
Well, for team leaders, I think it's about consciously designing how you work and how you reward people. You need systems that value both high performance, the win, and positive behavior, the play nice.
So setting high standards, but also ensuring psychological safety.
Absolutely. And collaboration. If someone hits their targets, but they poison the team culture while doing it, under this philosophy, they haven't really won. Their success isn't sustainable for the team.
Okay. And what about for people in sales or customer-facing roles? The application seems pretty direct there.
Oh, hugely powerful. It means shifting your mindset. You move away from just doing product pitches and towards being more like a problem-solving consultant for your customer.
Focusing on their challenges.
Deeply understanding their challenges, yeah. And you start measuring success, not just by the volume of transactions this quarter, but by things like customer lifetime value. You're proving you're a trustworthy long-term partner, not just pushing a product.
And for entrepreneurs, startups, any lessons there?
I think those early Dell lessons are priceless. Focus on things like customer-funded growth, if you can remember that negative cash conversion cycle.
Right, using customer money first.
And build your supplier relationships on genuine trust and mutual benefit, not just ruthlessly squeezing them for the lowest possible cost every single time. That trust becomes an asset. It lets you innovate faster because your partners are actually willing to take calculated risks with you.
Okay, wrapping things up. If I had to pick one personal takeaway, maybe something that surprised me from this whole deep dive, it's the way Dell reframes what winning actually means.
Mm.
It stops being about just crushing your competitors, you know, winning at their expense. Instead, it becomes about being the force that creates the most value in the market while rigorously maintaining an ethical line, even during aggressive competition. It just sets a much higher, maybe more meaningful bar for leadership.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's the most valuable lesson for you, the listener. It's that fundamental paradigm shift away from zero-sum thinking, my gain is your loss, towards more of an abundance mindset.
Right.
Playing nice in this context isn't about being soft or weak. It's presented as a strategic necessity. In today's interconnected world, the leader, the company that builds the most resilient, mutually beneficial network with customers, suppliers, employees, is arguably the one who achieves the most sustainable and meaningful kind of success. It really is a blueprint for leading with both fierce competitiveness and deep integrity.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.